Current State on WKAR. I'm Mark Bayshore. Thank you for joining us. I don't know a soul who is not at least mildly disturbed when they drive by a Lake Michigan or Lake Huron and they notice that the water levels are dramatically lower than they used to be. That is just upsetting visually, and it just leads to all kinds of questions, and we're going to try to answer some of those questions this morning. Some of our Great Lakes are dropping to record low water levels. Receding waters not only causing environmental challenges for the Great Lakes Basin, but it's also impacting the state's economy. Now, to offset the water levels, state lawmakers are trying to fund projects to dredge harbors and marinas throughout the Great Lakes region. And to talk about dredging and the future of the Great Lakes water levels, we welcome Patrick Dorn, Director of Conservation for the Michigan Chapter of the Nature Conservancy, and John Allen is Director of the Michigan Office of the Great Lakes. Welcome to both of you.
Thank you.
Well, it's Lake Michigan and Lake Huron, I understand, whose levels have dropped the most dramatically. Am I right about that?
Yeah, they're hydrologically connected, so they drop together.
Okay, and is there any informed consensus as to why?
You know, I think the big point, well, first is just say lake level fluctuations are a naturally occurring event. Our lakes have always fluctuated for hundreds of years, but I think in the past couple of years, we've hit a couple of events that and we'll almost give the perfect storm language, right? We've had some higher air temperatures, higher water temperatures, which lead to less ice cover. And we've also had less precipitation, both precipitation in terms of rain and snow. And so combined, those are less inputs into those lakes and more evaporation from those lakes, which have led to lower lake levels.
So we got climactic reasons. Do we have others?
Well, I think Pat's right that on cycle, we are at the bottom end of what has been historically a very long-term natural set of cycles. That doesn't help our boaters, and that doesn't help communities that need to get on the water. We're at the bottom edge of what has been a long-term pattern of highs and lows. Where we've been, though, over the last 10 to 12 years, we've seen some evidence from National Oceanic Atmospheric Administration, NOAA, that water levels have been low for longer periods of time than we've seen in the past and can continue to stay low. So we need to plan and make sure that we're adapting and planning for the potential for longer-term low water levels.
Well, let's address some of the environmental concerns. There are environmental and economic impacts here. Some of the environmental concerns, what are they?
Well, again, first, we have natural lake level fluctuations, and when we hit these low levels, actually in the last 30 years, we've had both record high levels and record low levels in that 30-year time frame. But when we hit those low levels, we start to see impacts on our coastal wetlands. So, for example, there might be less habitat for fish to spawn. Fish might not have access to some of the streams in which they've spawned because the lower levels expose culverts that they can't jump over.
Okay.
So we see impacts like that. We see less impacts for migratory birds. We're going to enter our April and May major migration. This is a migration corridor that's unrivaled in the world. There might be less habitat, but on the plus side, there might be more soils or more flats exposed for shorebirds to feed. So we have some both pros and cons.
One of the things we're concerned also with low water levels in Saginaw Bay and some other areas, does that also provide additional opportunities for the expansion of invasive species like the giant grass or the giant reed Phragmites?
Yeah.
Does this expand or potentially exacerbate their proliferation? It's something that we need to keep a strong eye on.
But then again, the one thing we do look for is these systems, our coastal systems, have evolved or adapted to fluctuating lake levels, and those actually fluctuating lake levels give rise to a productivity for those species. So again, we're used to that. We might see some near-term impacts from low lake levels, such as the increased habitat for invasive species. But we also might need to have those fluctuations over the long term.
I'm really curious. How recently were Great Lakes water levels at record highs? You said within the past 30 years?
1986, there was more water than we knew what to do with at that time, essentially.
Oh,
I mean, houses were eroding in, and there was substantial beach erosion at that point. So
lost
we've seen
property,
a
pretty
big fluctuation even over that period of time.
Well, it seems like a long time
it
ago.
It does, and I think this kind of gets to people's frame of reference when they look at the lakes now.
Right.
They might not remember 30 years ago. When they think about 30 years ago now, it might mean the drastic change now is a huge change that they've seen in their lifetime.
Yes, continue.
I was going to say, the critical piece that the governor has identified for this cycle, given the low levels and given the potential for persistence of low levels, is to make sure that we have a healthy, viable boating season. I think it's important that we make sure that our coastal communities that really rely heavily on the marina and the boating industry, that we have a short-term emergency plan to make sure that we're dredging in enough places that we can maintain the harbor of refuge system for Michigan. That's health and safety of people on the water, that we can get people onto the water, that they can enjoy really the gems of Michigan, and that is our Great Lakes. So we do have a plan in place. The governor has articulated about $21 million extra
right.
in that range to make sure that we can provide assistance to our communities to make sure that Michigan's open for business this year.
What are some of the, you're touching on an economic impact.
Absolutely.
Here. Let's go a little further into sure. that. What are some of the other economic impacts?
I had the privilege of working with the International Joint Commission on a study that was just completed last year, and we kind of broke the impacts of lake level changes down into sectors. So you see a transportation sector. So we ship iron ore and coal and grains around the Great Lakes to the tune of 20 million tons a year. One major impact is that they might not be able to access some of these ports, and they might have to carry lighter loads, which means they are shipping less or in a greater number of trips. There's a fuel impact, and so they might have that impact. You see impacts on recreations. Again, if our boaters come and they can't get access to their slip, or they have slips up the river a little bit and they have a little more shoreline than they did a few years ago, they might be less likely to visit some of these places.
And we're also making sure that ferries, Beaver Island, Sugar Island, and so the car ferry side of the system is also, you know, recognized as a need as water levels fluctuate, because that's also where land and water meet, right? That's where boats mm-hmm. and
if the governor's dredging plan got the go-ahead here and we moved on this $21 million dredging project, right. to what extent would that address the current problem?
That really does not address the current problem of lake levels. That allows an adaptation to keep those ports or marinas in business, but it does nothing to really address the facts that these lake levels are at a low level now. So it's part of an adaptation at this particular point in time, but it's not a long-term change in how the lakes are going to fluctuate.
John.
It recognizes the short-term need, and it does provide necessary funding to make sure our harbor communities can get boats on the water and they can have their summer season. We do need longer-term strategies, and the governor's also articulated to make sure that we look at longer-term durable funding. The transportation package, for instance, that the governor has talked about would add additional monies that would flow then into the waterways fund, or the Waterways Commission would be able to then look at long-term strategies for dredging, for harbor maintenance, for infrastructure maintenance within our coastal communities. So that's another aspect of what the long-term plan is. And Pat's right, we also need at some point a pivot point around dealing with dredging only as dredging, and it's ultimately a strategy for what is the long-term health of coastal harbor communities. What is sediment doing in those systems? Where is it coming from? Where is it going? And how are we managing those as healthy, functioning systems?
First things first here, though, have you taken the political temperature in terms of the $21 million dredging? I mean, do you expect that to happen?
I have heard nothing from the legislatures that suggest that they don't also recognize the crisis and the epic need that we have. If anything, I think the legislature recognizes, and rightly so, that there may be additional needs beyond the $21 million. Finding those strategies to make sure that we're attending to those is an ongoing series of conversations. But I think the legislature is very supportive. I was at a press conference yesterday on the Senate side that said they recognize this important need, this pressing need, and they're also looking to move Michigan forward, and we're looking to work with them together.
It's so visually impactful, though. I think anybody who goes up north ends up noticing it, and that really registers with people. So we want to thank both of you for joining us here today. John Allen is director of the Michigan Office of the Great Lakes. Patrick Dorn is director of conservation for the Michigan chapter of the Nature Conservancy. Thank you both.
Thank you, Mark.
Thank you.